that was a no and we need to move on. I like the way that he thought about that, of reframing a no is not something that you need to take personally. Sometimes no is a not right now. It's a come back to me later, maybe 2 years later down the track. Maybe that conversation had value and they'll come back to us if we can keep doing what we said we were going to do. Maybe that no is just a not right now. That's how I like to think about that kind of rejection.
Welcome to the Get Unstuck Fast Viscosity podcast, brought to you by VLM training and coaching specialists across the UK and Australia, hosted by me, Vicky Main. Are you a business owner, leader, or executive? Have you ever felt stuck or disappointed where your life or business is heading? Do you ever feel overwhelmed, compare yourself to others, or feel like you're swimming in treacle at times? This podcast is here to help you get unstuck fast, from viscosity to achieving escape velocity and expanding your knowledge. Our guests on the show will share practical tips and real-life experience about how they got out of negative situations or circumstances to live their best life on their terms. We will be sharing real-life stories from real people doing some incredible things. Stay tuned for our next guest.
Welcome to season 3, episode 3 of the Get Unstuck Fast Viscosity podcast. I'm your host, Vicky Main, and today we have a very special guest, Kate Kerwin, on the show. Welcome, Kate.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. Excited to be here.
Oh, thank you. I'm excited to have you on the show. And I'm sure all our listeners, when they hear of all the great things you've been up to, you're a very inspiring lady. So it's great to have you on the show. And you're currently in Perth, Western Australia right now.
I'm enjoying a little bit of sunshine today. It's theoretically winter, but sunniest place in the world. So enjoying
the
sunshine.
I know. I'm missing the sunshine there right now. But yeah, and you've recently been traveling all across Europe and had the best time ever. So I'm looking forward to sharing a bit more with our listeners about that as we go through the show. But first, let's get straight to it. You've had an incredible career. And I've watched your career blossom over the last, 9 years since I've lived in Perth. And I know we met through Space Cubed, which is a fantastic co-working space and community in the centre of Perth. And you're now a senior leader there. You're also the founder of She Codes Australia, which is an amazing concept. I know you're going to share more about that. But can you tell us about your career journey and what you are doing now and what you love about what you do?
Yeah. So I've gone in a couple of different directions over my career, even though I'm just about to turn 30 next month, but I've still managed to do quite a lot of stuff in that time. I've always loved working. So I'm definitely driven by work and by people and purpose. And when I come back to the things that I've loved about all of the jobs that I've done, it does distill down to people and purpose. And you can survive with one of them, but ideally you want both of them to be able to really enjoy the thing that you're doing. My first professional job was in a property management company. I was the office assistant, making sure everything worked. And then I moved to a charity and I was at MSWA, Multiple Sclerosis Society of Western Australia, and I was running all of their charity events. So we ran a whole heap of different bike rides and swims and everything to try and raise money for multiple sclerosis and other neurological conditions. And I did that while I was studying. So I was doing 3 days a week technically, but if anyone has ever worked for charity, 3 days a week is never 3 days a week. It's basically full-time work and full-time study, because I think I'm a little bit of a sucker for punishment, but I like keeping busy. And then I started at Space Cubes in events. And I think the crazy thing about this is I actually started in an exam week, which, why would you start a new job in exam week? I don't know, but started an exam week and I was working in an events role for Space Cubed events and community. So I was looking after a lot of our event spaces and corporate bookings and then activating community and supporting our members. And I've been able to grow through that over the last 9 years. So I've been there since 2014. And what I do now is, as you said, I run She Codes Australia. So we're a coding program for women. We've taught about 6,500 women across Australia, mostly in Perth, Brisbane, and Sydney, but some people in Melbourne. We just ran a workshop earlier this year. We've done some online stuff in South Australia, and we've done some stuff around regional Western Australia as well. So we've been down to Albany, Geraldton, Port Hedland, Karratha, Newman, which is the middle of nowhere, and then St. Chip and Mandurah outside of the metro area as well. So I've done quite a lot of stuff in the regions as well as in Perth and Western Australia. So yeah, that's what I do most of the time now. I'm really passionate about providing those opportunities for women. So people often think that I'm a developer and I'm not. I was trying to teach myself how to code and was really inspired by like the other people in our spaces who worked in tech. And I just wanted to understand them better. Went along to all of these meetups and events and everything went way over my head. And I remember there was a time that I was at a tech event and I was at my work and I knew 50% of the people there, but I was a little bit like the presentation had already started and I was coming back to grab my bag and I was wearing a bright green dress and I had heels on. So it was loud when I was walking over the floor and every single person stared at me. They like turned and stared and I felt so uncomfortable. I was like, I don't fit in here. I'm wearing green. Everybody else is in black and white and like very different kind of people to the kind of person that I am. I felt so uncomfortable. And I was like, how? I know these people. I'm at my work and I still feel like I don't fit in. But imagine being someone completely new to this ecosystem and feeling like, oh, this isn't for me. I'm too feminine or I'm not nerdy enough or I'm not smart enough or there's all of these things that women put on themselves. So that's what my programs are like, trying to solve some actual hard technical skills, but also change a little bit the mindset of the industry at the same time.
Yeah. It's so interesting that you talk about those things we tell ourselves, because I've done exactly the same. And I know we've met through obviously the ecosystem and the tech space in Perth, but also every year I used to do the Space Cube Christmas party as the DJ, not this year, obviously. And I also did the Women in Technology WA DJ. I was a resident DJ there. So that was such good fun. But I remember in the early days of starting out that career, because although I love music, I was self-taught and it just became natural to me. And I could see how what I loved is people would connect on the dance floor and I loved the community feel. But those things you just described about what you would tell yourself, I remember when I started something new like DJing, I would have those fears or those things that I would say to myself. And it's almost like you've got to train your brain to go, come on, these are things that you don't need to keep telling yourself. But I think we all have this inside of us. And even men, women, I don't think it's gender specific or whatever. It's easy to go down that path, isn't it? Saying things to yourself, and it can block us from huge success and living your best life. What I loved recently, and I know I've been to one of your classes, now I might get this term wrong, but your hula hooping dance classes, is that right? You just get in that hoop and you just own that space. And I love that. And it's such good exercise. And you do that sort of semi-professionally, or you do that sort of as a hobby now, or what's...
Yeah, so I describe myself as semi-professional, but it's funny. Even that word is funny because I have been paid to do gigs, which makes me a professional, but I still am like, oh, I'm only a semi-professional.
Well, I didn't know what you would describe, or obviously you are a professional in terms of what you're doing, but I didn't know if you took this seriously as something that you do or you just love it. You love it. And it's...
Yeah, I'm recently just doing it because I love it. There's something really magical about bringing joy. And I think in everything that I do is about bringing joy. And one of our fundamental values at She Codes that I wrote into our values is that we're positive and fun. And if we can't find the one, like, what's the point in doing it? Learning new things is hard. There's a whole heap of really negative stuff about if you go down that rabbit hole in their gender equity space. So let's try and have as much fun with this as we can. Yeah. And fun to learn a new thing. But what I really love about hula hooping is everyone's laughing, they're having fun. You can't help it but to laugh at yourself and be like, I don't know what I'm doing, but it's joyful movement. And I really love exercise that is about joyful music. If that's dance, if that's hula hooping, whatever it is, having fun with it. Exercise should be fun, not like a thing that we have to do.
Yeah, keep doing it because you're obviously thriving and I love the variety of what you're doing. Now, what was great? So you were a winner of the 40 under 40 with Business News in Western Australia in Perth. And it was so lovely to see you up there collecting your award. And I think what you've achieved in your 20s is incredible, Kate. We need to celebrate more women doing these amazing things, because I was really excited to see you up there because you are quite a humble lady. You don't need to shout from the rooftops about what you're doing, because you just do it and get on with it and people gravitate towards you. And I know when I saw you recently in London as part of your trip, we were talking and having a coffee and we were talking about otters now and your raft of bitches, as you call them. And you introduced me to this concept. Now tell me about what this is all about and tell me about how this came onto your radar, because I think it's quite fascinating.
So there was an article that I read a couple of years ago that was about the queen bee syndrome, that as women, we shouldn't be like queen bees that are trying to tear each other down, that we should be more like otters. So female otters, when they're sleeping, they hold hands and they form a little raft so that no one floats away, so that they can all sleep calmly and peacefully together, and they know that they're all going to stay together and not float away. Now, female otters are called bitches, like female dogs. So a raft of bitches is a group of female otters all swimming together, making sure that no one floats away from the raft. So I really loved this article. And there's been a couple of like Twitter movements about raft of bitches. But this idea is that we need these different kinds of people in our raft to keep us afloat. And so mine started with a group chat with a couple of my really good friends. And there's different kinds of personalities that you need in your raft, like the people who are going to aggressively support you no matter what, the people who are like, one of my friends is really good at asking. She's like, I could convince you either way. What do you want me to convince you of? Because whatever the thing is, the end result that you want to get to, I can totally convince you to get there, which is just very cool, because I would usually come in strong with whatever my opinion is. But she's like, no, what's the opinion that, where do you actually want to get to with this question that you're asking?
Yeah.
So we've been toying around, and this is what I was talking to you about. We've been toying around with creating a little podcast of our own, of connecting people, talking about who is in their raft, because I think every woman has a raft of other women who've supported them, go to for help and advice. But who are the people that are missing from your raft? What are the kinds of skills sets or personality types that would help us stay more afloat? This is something we've been toying around with for a couple of years, and we haven't had the time to get there, but I reckon in the next 12 months, we'll have a Raft of Bitches podcast. So you can stay tuned for that.
I love that. When I think about it, I do have my own raft. And I think as time, well, what's lovely now is I have a raft because I'm building an international business. I have my raft in Australia. I have my raft in Perth and across various places, because Perth, Western Australia is a pretty huge place, let's face it. And I have my raft in Sydney, my raft in Melbourne, and create these mini rafts, my raft in India and in the UK and in the US. And it's so important to surround yourself, not only with people, and some of that raft is men as well. But I think it's important to not just surround yourself with people who are going to tell you what you want to hear. It's actually about supporting you with people who will give you an objective opinion, but want the best for you, but also aren't afraid to say, there's being kind and there's things like that. But if someone needs to hear something and give and really help them get to the next level of success, because I've written a book, as you know, about becoming unstuck. And if I see someone where I know that there's blockages, but they can't necessarily see themselves, I might have conversations with them and ask them questions that might help them get to that realization. But again, you're spot on. Having those people in your support network and that raft of bitches is so important. And She Chords Australia is building that raft of like-minded people who love a fun activity, who want to learn and who also want to extend their network. So I wish you all the success with what you're doing with She Chords. And I hadn't realized you actually had like over 6,500 people that you've already trained. And I did see a course last year. I was going to come on actually with you guys, and I still might in the future. Maybe you can do some online versions as well, and not just the face-to-face. Is that in the pipeline?
We've toyed around with some online stuff. We obviously did it during COVID because we had to. That was a wild time. I expanded to Brisbane for the first time in the beginning of 2020. And our first program in Brisbane had to go online. My team, I never met them until 12 months later, which was crazy. We've done some online stuff before. I think What's challenging with online is it's much harder to build that relationship that you can in in-person program. And you also have to go about things very differently when you do things online. And I've seen a lot of other education providers assume that you can pick up an in-person program, stick it online, hope for the best. And it just doesn't work because there's all these nuances of how you teach online. And we were really specific about the way that we went about it. At the beginning of the call, you had to go and get your pet and bring them on the camera and talk about things in your room or trying to engage on a more personal level than just camera, where a lot of online courses, people have the camera off. They're very shut down. It's just listening. It's a one-way dialogue, has to be a two-way dialogue. You've got to think about breaks differently. Teaching online is a whole different thing to teaching in person. And I do think that our skill set is about building those in-person relationships and building that really tight support network, which I haven't seen a way to translate that as effectively online. We haven't gone down that route, but I know I keep getting emails from people in regional areas or overseas or people that travel, and they're like, I really would love to do this online. I'm like, I get it. I really do get it. But if we do it, I want to do it right.
Yeah, I wish you luck with that. So what inspired you to do what you do? You started off working in various jobs, and I know you talk about people and purpose and passion, but was there a fundamental moment where you thought, ah, this is it, this is what I'm doing? And I'm sure there's a lot more things that you want to achieve in your life because you're still in your early career in your 30s. I'm sure you're going to do some amazing things. But is there something that fundamentally inspired you to go, right, this is what I'm going to do? Or did it just evolve?
I think it's been a process of evolving. So for She Codes, I just wanted to try and learn something and was having a conversation with Marcus Holmes 9 years ago, who taught an hour of code presentation that I went along to, and that he wanted to do some stuff in the women's space. And he asked me to be part of that journey with him. So I still call him a co-founder, even though he hasn't even been in Australia for most of our journey. We started there and we would do a little bit more, and then the community wanted more. We went and got some funding. I didn't turn it into a full-time role until 2019. So it was 5 years down the track that I was just doing this on the evenings and weekends and trying to make things work. But then we're at a point where chasing funding to make it more permanent happened in 2019. And now I've got a team. So we're still really tiny. I've taught 6,500 women, and my team is 3 full-time equivalent people, including me. I've got 1 full-time staff and 2 part-time people, which is crazy. It's so small to be able to do the quantity of what we're doing. Yeah, it's been a series of evolving moments. And I don't know where we're going next. You can make a lot of plans, but then you've also got a lot of room for things to happen as well.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I think since, dare I say, the pandemic, I think people are less inclined to make 10-year plans or anything like that. Just going with the flow. I was doing some financial modeling yesterday and looking at different things and thought, well, I'm not going to prepare for more than 3 years because you don't know with this current class. You just don't know. It's interesting you say that. So let's talk about mindset. And I know you've recently read my book, which I wrote with Jonathan, The Momentum Mindset. And I'm curious, can you share some tips about dealing with setbacks and knockbacks or not giving up and resilience? I'm wondering what you've done and what you would suggest to other people who maybe are going through their own inertia.
Yeah. Sorry, I've got your book right here. I was
And I didn't pay you to do that, by the way.
I know, it's just here, which is really lovely to read. I was saying at the beginning, I was traveling recently, and I think the way you've written this is that there are little sections that you can pick up, which is really nice, especially with a traveling book. But anyway, that's your little book plug for the moment. How do I deal with setbacks?
Thank you.
You're welcome. And I was talking about this earlier with one of my team members. Our model is that we sell to corporates. Corporates fund scholarships in the program for women. And I'm normally talking to big companies like BHP and Bankwest and Commonwealth Bank, Woodside, like large companies that take a really long time. And sometimes you've been talking to a company for a really long time and then you're getting positive, and then you get a no. And it's really frustrating because you've invested so much time in a relationship that goes nowhere, which can be really hard. And I think one of the things that I've learned from another founder, actually, I was in San Francisco, and I think that this is crazy. So I don't know that I would do this, but I like the way that he thought about it. There was a founder who was talking about, I can't remember the word, rejection therapy. he was just going around asking people crazy things because he was fundraising. So he was trying to make a lot of money. And he was going around and asking, like, an Uber driver, can I drive the car? Asking a random person on the street, can you give me $200? Like crazy stuff that he's going to get a no, just so that he could get used to the word no and being told no over and over and over again of things that he actually didn't care about because he doesn't really want to drive the Uber driver's car or have a random person on the street give him $200. But just to get used to a no is just a no. And that's okay. Sometimes you can just pick it up and be like, okay, yeah, cool. That was just a no and we need to move on. I don't know that I would ever do it, but I like the way that he thought about that of reframing a no is not something that you need to take personally. Sometimes the things I've said with my team is that even a no is a not right now. So it's a come back to me later or maybe 2 years later down the track. Maybe that conversation had value and they'll come back to us if we can keep doing what we said we were going to do. Maybe that no is just a not right now. That's how I like to think about that kind of rejection. And then what I do is on the days that things are really hard is coming back to the purpose of why you're doing what you're doing. So I love to read some stories from my girl on how we've actually managed to change their life or the things that they've enjoyed and trying to distill that back down into moments of what did I do to cause that success and reacquaint with that purpose. I think that's a really powerful exercise that we don't do often enough.
Absolutely. And what's lovely is you reflect and go back to those lovely testimonials. Have you ever heard of having a success wall, like in your home office and having pictures that relate to like your picture of your 40 under 40 with the award and maybe a picture with sessions that you did in Brisbane or Melbourne and Perth and looking at a visual representation of what success is for you. And that can be really powerful too. And I know when I was even back to my teaching days years ago, so I was teaching from 2008, I remember students might email me something lovely out the blue, or someone would send me, a parent would send me a letter or something. And I've still laminated those from years ago and I've still got them in a box somewhere. But things like that mean a lot. They mean a lot to someone. And you're right. When the going gets tough, you can look back at those and go, ah, right, that's why I do what I do. And I think that's really special too. So yeah, love that. Love that. So what was your favorite part of the book? I'm curious.
I don't know if I've got one moment. Really should have thought about this before, but
it's all right.
I think there was lots of little bits. I love that you've got some quotes in there, some like stories from people from all over the world. So you've got little bits from people in Perth. And it was nice to see names that I recognize as well, people from the ecosystem. Yeah. I'm like, oh yeah, person in the book, as well as some people that I don't know and some famous people in there as well. I think there was lots of little nice moments and bits that you can come back to as well. So I've got a few little bits flagged that I'll come back to.
I'm looking forward to reading a book about how you created this movement of women in Australia coding. And 10 years from now, I'm going to pick up a shell. I'm going to go to WH Smith in the airport in Heathrow and find your book. I reckon everybody's got a book in them. And for me, it felt like I had to do it because at the time before I wrote the book, I was going through my own inertia. In my garage in Perth, I had a whiteboard and I went in there one Sunday morning and mapped out the book. That was it. It came to me and I wrote it all out, mapped it out. And then it evolved over a series of a year and a half and having conversations. And then I built the podcast. And then you're right, it just, those things came in. But a seed of an idea can lead to so many wonderful things. And as I said at my last book, the session I had here in the Isle of Wight, where I am currently at the moment, I said to the people in the room, this book is not just about a story about partaking my knowledge onto other people and sharing that. It's actually a story about, for me, collaboration, the journey of collaboration, the journey of community, the journey of meeting new people. And in the last 3 months, we've had 5 book events in the UK and in Perth. And it's been so lovely to catch up with so many people who I haven't seen for ages. So it's definitely an excuse to have a party. We've done it 5 times over, but it's not about the knowledge there. And I think from one seed of idea, like you had with She Codes Australia, look where it led to for you and having those conversations with Marcus. I think it's incredible. So what would you say is the bravest or scariest thing you've ever done, Kate?
Bravest or scariest thing that I've ever done. I went skydiving once. There's actually a video of me on YouTube, which has my whole name on it. So you could totally look it up if you want to. It's so embarrassing because I cried the whole time. It's just a terrified young Kate crying on the skydive. But it was something that I did with my ex-boyfriend, and I knew that he was really passionate about it. And I was like, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. And then on the morning, we were staying in Durian Bay, 5 minutes down the road from the skydive place. And it was the night before, I think I was like, let's just do it tomorrow. He was like, why? You've been saying for weeks that you don't want to do this. Let's just do it tomorrow. And then we did, and I hated it. But anyway, I jumped out of a plane. And then, yeah, it's filmed, which is super embarrassing that there's a video of me crying on a plane.
Well, you're braver than me, because I was in Durian Bay in a camper van in January up in, so it's for people who don't live in Perth in Western Australia, it's like way north. And I was up there having dinner with my partner, and we were having cocktails the night before, and I was actually in the restaurant, and the lady who was there, we were watching these skydiving videos, and I said, oh, that would be fun. And the lady who was the waitress actually worked at the skydiving place as well. She said, oh, hey, I'll book you in the next morning. So she booked me in the next morning after me having a couple of margarita cocktails. And I woke up the next day, I thought, I can't do it. It doesn't feel right. I can't do it to myself. And like you say, you did it. You fulfilled that. You went through it. Even though you cried all the way, you put yourself through that. For me, I couldn't do it. And it's not the first time I've bottled out of doing a skydive, but it's like me with heights. It's why would you want to jump out of a perfectly like great plane that's flying?
I know. I'm like, I'm pretty good with heights. It's just the idea of jumping out of something into nothing. Anytime that I have to leave a solid, I'm happy standing on a really tall thing. Jumping a really tall thing scares me because I think my life, I don't know, I want to live.
Yeah. I've swam with sharks in Fiji, and that was pretty, well, reef sharks. So I wouldn't say they're great whites or anything, but let's be clear. I thought I was just going snorkeling on a reef, and I look down and someone shouts, hey, there's sharks down there. And that was pretty scary for me. But yeah, that was probably one of the scariest things I've done. So obviously, what does the future hold for you in your career and what you're doing now? There's some great things that are happening with the community at Space Cube. What are you going to do in the future with your career? What's the plans?
I actually don't really know. This last 12 months has been a real kind of pivot point for me in a lot of different areas of my life. I've gone through a lot of personal change over the last 12 months of like ending a relationship. I moved house. I'm turning 30 next month. There's just been like lots of change in a really condensed period of time. And where the business is at, we've had a bunch of change in where the business is at too. Changing the model, changing a little bit the team. It's been a very turbulent 12 months. Like I was just saying before, I've just come back from 2 months overseas. So I was definitely completely burnt out towards the end of last year. I've been doing lots of personal change. I was traveling to Sydney every 2 weeks for 3 months, which for anyone who's not in Australia, that is a 5-hour flight with 3-hour time difference that I did every 2 weeks, something like 12 flights in 12 weeks, which was just a lot. And then at the end of that, I got COVID for the first time. So my body was completely burnt out at the beginning of this year. And I was having a chat to our managing director that was in a complete meltdown. I honestly was in a complete meltdown in Miri. And he was like, Kate, I think you need to take a break. So I took 2 weeks off. And then when I came back, I was like, I need to take a proper break. So I went away for 2 months in Europe and got to be in Europe for summer, which was lovely. And now I've just been back at work for a week now, catching back up on where everything is at. Been a lot of change in a really short period of time, which kind of figuring out what the future looks like right now. And I don't have the answer, but hopefully over the next couple of weeks, some kind of clarity forms of what that looks like.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. And I think there is strength in vulnerability. And quite often as women, we tend to suppress and not share some of these things like publicly. And I think it's okay to say, you know what, had some challenges, but I'm taking some time out. And I know I've had burnout. I've had relationship endings and various things, divorce and all that. But you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And I think it's about digging down, like you say, and having that time out and time to reflect on you as a person and who you are and what you want to do next and what lights you up. Doing things that bring you joy and doing more dancing and classes, and that's so important. So I really wish you well with the future. And I think it sounds like doing more traveling is going to be your thing in the future, because you just look like you were having the time of your life. And it was the best. Like you were telling me about your itinerary and what you did, about 20 countries in 2 months. Was that right?
Yeah, I think I ended up in 11 different countries in 2 months, which is quite a lot.
Oh, did you?
I definitely tired myself out.
Yeah, but even that, doing that would be so interesting for people to read for sure.
Yeah, and I'm not like, I'm actually not a very spontaneous person. I am a Virgo that loves calendar invites and structure and routine, and traveling just throws all of that out the window because you have a plan, but if things change, flights are delayed, you're train doesn't go where you think it's going to go. You meet someone and your plan for tomorrow changes because you hang out with them instead. So it was very interesting getting out of my comfort zone and to be a little bit more spontaneous and less structured for a little while. I was talking about that the other day, like, how do I bring that back into my regular work and life as well? I still crave structure, but leaving room for a little bit more spontaneity.
Yeah. And I think if there's 100% spontaneity, it's great for a while, but I think there's got to be a balance, don't you? A bit of a balance there and for sure. But thanks for sharing that. So a couple of final questions. I'm curious in terms of, obviously you're a leader and you've been working in the space and working with a lot of people with different values and behaviors and all these things. What do you think the top three things that leaders need to navigate and build great teams, generally speaking?
Yeah, I think it is the best and worst part of any job is people. It's so rewarding being around good people that you can celebrate the journey with. And like I said at the beginning, people on purpose are things that really drive me. So being around good people is really important, but managing people is really hard. And I think you can be a manager and a leader forever and still be learning things about how you could have done it better or how you could have supported someone better. I don't think that it ever stops, which is a shame because I'd really love to say that I'd nailed it. But the things I think are really important is being able to listen to your team and being able to ask the right questions, figuring out when, seeing if you can push them on when they're burnt out or if they need something else, and trying to ask the right questions that maybe they can't see in themselves, and being able to have that two-way dialogue of feedback. And feedback is a gift. So I've said that a few times in various formats, that people are really worried about feedback, but without feedback, you can't get any better. And you need to be able to give feedback, but you also need to be able to receive feedback and not take it personally. It's a data point that you can use in decision-making. It's the data point, it's feedback. Yeah. Most people don't usually mean ill harm by giving constructive, helpful feedback. So there, I think, probably the main things. Yeah. But yeah, I definitely don't think that I've nailed being a leader yet. I think there's always more to learn, and being part of that continuous learning and continuous change.
Yeah. And that's great. I love what you've said there about listening and the communication and things. Interestingly, I've qualified as a practitioner using the conflict dynamic profile tool. And it was a real insight for me because I wanted to understand more about myself. What are my hot buttons and what creates friction for me to make myself a better leader, better person, better human, that sort of thing. And it led me on this journey. And it's really interesting because when we talk about hot buttons of things that, and I'm fascinated by human behavior, of things that can upset people or, and as a leader, you've just mentioned there about listening and the communication and feedback and getting to know that person. And these things in the hot buttons can come up and cause, if someone doesn't get, like one of my hot buttons was making sure that I got a bit of appreciation and praise now and again. Like occasionally I remember jobs where I've been like a workhorse and working all the time and all those things, and a simple thank you goes a long way. But if I didn't ever get that and I felt staff maybe around me were doing the very bare minimum and getting all this like kudos, it would be like, doesn't feel right to me. And that was a great awareness piece for me that I needed to understand what my hot buttons are. And it's a fascinating tool. So I thank you for sharing that. And I love what you said, Kate. And again, this comes back to you being so humble that you're always learning. And as a leader, I think having that awareness piece, and I was recording a podcast a couple of days ago with a lady called Deb, who's the CEO of Worth in Australia and Perth, Women and Infants Research Foundation. And she was saying that she recruits people who are more talented than what she is because she knows they'll get the job done and things like that. It's fascinating. It's really fascinating about leadership.
Yeah. If you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
To be constantly surrounding yourself with people smarter than you. And I love what you were saying before as well with figuring out who you are and who your team members are, because I think one of the challenges with communication is that we just assume that everyone is like us and thinks like us. And I know a few years ago as an organization, we did one of those tools of your unconscious motivators and talking through what drives you, how you like to receive praise. So my unconscious motivators from this was like, I needed to be needed and appreciated. Like, I want someone to specifically tell me, I need you, Kate. I want you, Kate. Thank you, Kate. Yeah. Other members of my team are like, oh, but you can just see that you did a good job because you got the result, because they're driven by results. Yeah. So they don't need someone saying, great job, Kate, whatever, because they can see it through the results of the things that they're doing. That was very interesting. And I learned a lot about one of my team members. Hers was like, she needed to be correct and right. And I realized that putting her on the spot with a question would really stress her out because she wanted to be correct and she wanted time to prepare an answer to something. So instead for her, I would be like, hey, I want to ask you this thing. And then like circle back around to it like 20 minutes later that she had time to be correct and prepared, which made our communication a lot better when we understood that. Yeah. I was like, why didn't she answer me? I don't understand. But it's because she wanted the time to process.
That's a great example, actually. A really good example. I never thought about it like that. Really great example. Well, any final remarks about any tips that you want to share with people who are maybe feeling a bit stuck at the moment and wanting, cause your experience of what you've done in the last year? And then you said you had some changes in your life and it led you to this wonderful traveling experience. Any other tips that you would have for our listeners who are maybe going through inertia at the moment or feeling really stuck in what they're doing?
Yeah, find who your raft is and make sure that you have the support that you need, because without the amazing support of my family and friends, I wouldn't be anywhere. And going through hard things is so much easier when you've got someone to support you. My other little saying that I have, which I've got a little neon sign on my wall over here, but it says always bring the sparkle, is my little tagline. So for me, that's really important. That, and there's ways that you can force the sparkle when you're not feeling the sparkle. For me, if I'm on a call that I think I'm going to be really stressed about, or I'm doing a presentation and I'm anxious, then I'll go put on a fun lipstick and try and bring the sparkle some other way so that I can lean into being the most fun, authentic version of me. Sometimes you need a little bit of help, and sometimes some fun lipstick can fix that for you. And then chasing joy. So joyful movement. I think you can't underestimate the power of going and dancing and having fun and laughing and being silly. It doesn't need to be, even when things are really hard. Sometimes finding ways to find the fun in what you're doing can make a huge difference to your mindset and give you a bit more space to think when you're not so stressed.
Yeah, I love that. I love finding the sparkle and the joy and consciously thinking about how you want to show up. And the fact that putting that lipstick on, that fun lipstick, is a metaphor for you going, right, okay, I'm going to go out there and do this. And I love that. And I often do that too, like where, not necessarily with lipstick, but it's about colors. I'll wear different colors for different moods I'm in. If I'm wearing red, business. Like, I know it just puts me in the mood, but it depends on the colors. And I don't wear a lot of black, although I'm wearing a black jacket today, but I feel like for me, it doesn't light me up. So I wear a lot of bright colors because I feel that that brings me joy. And I love that, what you say. So Kate, you're an amazing lady, amazing leader, very inspirational woman. And I've really enjoyed our conversation and I'm really looking forward to seeing what you do next. And I know you tagged me in a post on LinkedIn saying girls on the rafts, and I'm there with you and support you and love what you're doing and keep inspiring the masses because you're going to go far. You're an incredible woman. So thank you for being on the show today and good luck. Where can people find you? Online. What's your website?
Yeah. So SheCodes, we're SheCodes Australia, or SheCodes AUS on about every platform. The website is SheCodes.com.au. There is another SheCodes.io, which is a guy in Portugal. That's not us. So we're SheCodes Australia on every platform. But if you want to find me, so I'm Kate Kerwin. I'm on LinkedIn and all of my social media is just my name. And you can look up the very embarrassing, hilarious video of me skydiving if you want to.
Amazing. I'm going to have a little sneak peek before my next guest. Thank you so much. And looking forward to when I'm back in Perth, hopefully seeing you at Space Cubed and being part of the community again. And you're an amazing woman and I wish you all the best. Thank you.
Thank you.